Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of People Stack Academy. And my guest for this episode is Samantha Glassberg, People Operations Director at Stitch. Welcome. Welcome, Sam.
Hello.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Excited to talk with you.
And me as well.
Great. So let's get this going. And first, let's talk about Stitch. I'd like to hear a little bit about Stitch, what you folks do there, and also specifically what your job, what does it mean to be a people operations director?
Sure. So Stitch is relatively a new name for us. So I kind of like to tell a little bit of a backstory. So Stitch evolved from RJ Metrics. And RJ Metrics was a bit more of a well-known company. RJ Metrics was a business intelligence and data analytics company. We had a core platform that was later known as Cloud BI that focused on business intelligence and data analytics. And last year actually launched a second product, which was formerly known as Pipeline, that focused on solving a problem that we saw really frequently at RJ, which was the fact that, you know, all of our prospective customers had their data from their cloud services and in their database in all of these disparate different places, and kind of came with the idea, well, it would be really great if everyone could get all of that stuff into one data warehouse because it would make it easier for a tool like RJ Metrics to plug on top of that. And from there evolved Pipeline. Earlier this year, we went through a merger, an acquisition. We went through an acquisition with Magento Commerce. So Magento actually acquired part of our business. They acquired the RJ Metrics Cloud BI part of it. And from there, we rebranded Pipeline, which has now evolved to be Stitch. And again, Stitch is a powerful ETL tool built for developers with the goal of putting all of our prospective customers' disparate data into one single data warehouse.
Great. So let's jump right into talking about the acquisition, because I know that this is something that happens relatively frequently, if not quite frequently, in the tech world. I know that definitely in the Boston area, it's, you know, almost every day or at least every week you hear about either a new merger or an acquisition or something like that. So as someone who was as part of that recently, I'd love to hear your thoughts about that, to talk about what the acquisition was like from your vantage point. And also, because I know that your job is very people oriented, and that putting people at the center of the workplace is very core to what you do. How did you keep people at the core of what was likely a difficult situation?
Yes. I just remembered I didn't answer one of your questions, which was, what does a people operations director do at Stitch? And so I'll answer that now because it leads in perfectly to this topic, everything that has to do with our people. So whether that's from like an internal or external focus, I am, you know, in charge of recruitment, but also retention and things that we keep our people happy. So essentially everything. So I'm kind of talking about the acquisition earlier this year. It was probably one of the most interesting and most challenging things that I've got to experience in my career. And the thing that I think that most people neglect to realize, maybe not neglect, but just don't realize, is how long it takes for something like this to come to fruition, to go through the process and get to the point where you are literally signing on the dotted line. I can tell you that from the initial conversations to the day that the acquisition was announced on August 1st was over 6 months. And that is probably one of the hardest challenges from a people perspective. When do you loop in your employees? When your employees know something's going on, like what questions do you answer? How do you answer them? What is the overall communication strategy around something like that? That was probably one of the biggest challenges that we faced, because people got to the point where they started to ask, you know, what's next for RJ? Like, what is our, you know, is our focus? What's our roadmap? You know, what are we doing? And the thing that I think that we did differently, and the thing that I really appreciate, I have two amazing co-founders that I had the opportunity to partner with at RJ. They were super transparent, probably more transparent than any company. More transparent than any company that I have, had the opportunity to speak to. And to kind of explain what that means, from day one, you know, Bob, our CEO, was putting things on his calendar and he wasn't hiding them. And then once people started asking, he answered truthfully and said, you know what, there are numerous options. He actually did a presentation during an all hand just the 7 possible scenarios of what would happen post RJ, which went from, you know, an IPO to bankruptcy, and somewhere in the middle came up an acquisition. And we had come to a point where it was clear that the IPO path was not going to be the path that we were going to take. Mm-hmm. So we would have to really start looking at some of those other options. And that was back in March that he was having this open conversation, and that left a lot of unknowns. And I remember looking at him and being like, are we ready to take that risk? Like, what if people leave? What if people flee here because they're concerned about their jobs? And ultimately, we decided that we were okay with that possible risk. And that's been a huge part of our people strategy since day one. We call it here DTRT, do the right. That is a part of doing the right thing. It's just being transparent and truthful. I'm happy to say that, you know, we reaped the rewards from that. You know, did we have turnover? Yes. But were people running out the door? No. And that's because at every milestone and every checkpoint along the way, you know, we were looping people in. And that even comes to the point where it became clear that we were not going to be able to place, you know, in the acquisition and the ultimate split that would be a part of that. We knew that there were a small, small handful of people that just unfortunately weren't going to be placed anywhere. And it's a small number, you know, less than 10%. But once we had an idea of what that time frame would look like and what that would be, we sat down and we had conversations with each of them. And we made sure that they were here working and helping us transition, but that they knew that their number one job was to go out there and find another job, and that we were there to support them in doing that. So just kind of, you know, those are just some major, you know, milestones along the way. But, you know, that is one of, like, I think the hardest things is just knowing how much to tell people. And one of the things that I think that we did was we told people everything. And I think that that's, you know, we earned respect for that. We have, you know, this is startup life. We have so many people here that have been a part of other startups, that have been a part of other acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And the immediate reaction was, I found out my company was acquired on the day that the deal was signed, and I was no longer an employee of that organization. So if you think of, like, where that side of the pendulum is, we were on the complete other side.
Yeah. How many employees are there now? So is it are you Stitch? Are you Magento? How do you sort of define yourselves in that world now, given that this was an acquisition, right? So you got acquired by Magento. So So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So this is super, it's not super complicated. It just feels complicated. So it was actually an asset acquisition. So it wasn't a company acquisition. Magento did not actually purchase RJ Metrics, but as a part of the deal, it was very important to them that they were taking the RJ Metrics name along with them, because RJ Metrics was associated with the product known as Cloud BI, which is the asset that they purchased, for 8 years. And so that's what our customers had become familiar with. And Stitch was still relative. It was so new. It's so, not relatively then, but now is, like, still so new to the marketplace that it wasn't something that we felt like we had to fight about. We were going to rebrand anyways and turn to Stitch. So that's what I think causes a lot of confusion from, like, the PR capacity, is people are like, oh, RJ Metrics was acquired. But Stitch is actually operating under the same tax ID that RJ Metrics was. It's just we're a different name now. And eventually the RJ Metrics name will be completely removed, and it'll be known as, so right now it's still RJ Metrics Analytics, which is a part of a Magento Commerce. Okay. Eventually it'll be Magento Analytics. They are a separate company. They're a separate entity. Stitch is, in order to support this business initiative, and today we're about 27 people.
Okay, so you're pretty small.
We are very small. It's been an interesting roller coaster. This time last year, I was 145 people. So I've been all over the place.
Okay. So there was a downsizing that happened as well then?
Yes, there was. That was earlier this year.
Okay. Was that part of the acquisition, or was that separate? Or
So it wasn't part of the acquisition, but it also kind of was. It was kind of one of those moments where we were really taking a step back and trying to figure out what the future held. I'd be lying if I didn't say we fell into a couple of the startup traps. You know, startup trap number one, you hire too many people too quickly.
Yeah.
I think we did really, really good for, you know, we did well for a very long time about being very cautious and careful about our hiring. And especially when it came to acquiring and retaining customers, you know, we just had an algorithm. We're looking at the data. We needed to win this this much business, we needed this many salespeople. And if we were going to win this much business, we needed this many people to manage it. And we got a little bit of ahead of ourselves from a hiring perspective, but it was also at that time that we were noticing trends in the marketplace that were leading us to believe that, you know, the path to continuing RJ Metrics to an IPO was probably not going to be the path that we were taking. And it was trying to figure out what that next best option was. But it got to a point where in December, I would say that we were taking a look at the numbers and we just weren't being financially responsible as a business. Mm-hmm. We're burning a lot of cash. The turnaround, you know, we weren't seeing the ROI from the number of people that we had here. And I don't know that that was their fault. I know that my CEO would say the same thing. I think we could go back and we could look at it in so many different scenarios and wonder, you know, where we went wrong with that. But to your point, earlier this year, we did make a very difficult decision and we did have to let go a decent size of our organization, somewhere, I think, between 25 and 30%, and ended up being around, I think, 28 people. Mm-hmm. It was probably the hardest day that we've had here, without a doubt.
Yeah, I can imagine how that would be really hard. I want to talk more about this, about the downsizing and hiring too quickly and your role in this. But as I was listening to you, I realized that even for myself a little bit, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, and there may be listeners who want to hear a little bit more about what Stitch does and how Stitch helps folks. How would you explain it to what you do to say a 10-year-old or a 13-year-old? How do you help people at Stitch?
Yeah, so let me give it my best shot here. But so to tell a little bit about what Stitch does. So we all have data. We have lots of information. And look at data as information. So there's information about us that is everywhere. And so, for example, I'll think of like if you have an iPhone or something like that. You have photos that are on your iPhone. You have apps that are on your iPhone. You have email that comes in through your phone. You have all these different sources of information, but that are technically all stored in different locations. So my email is stored in my Gmail. My purchases for, you know, I used Rent the Runway this weekend to rent a dress. So my Rent the Runway information is stored in my app. And all of my information for that app is then stored in the cloud that's a part of Apple. So, you know, for any person or just even any company, so trying to kind of expand that, you know, a company has information. So let's talk about some of the platforms we alone use here internally. So first and foremost, you know, people are coming to our websites and making purchases. So we have a back-end database to track that information. And what a database is just something that holds a bunch of information. So it's telling me who is purchasing, the demographic of who's purchasing, when they're purchasing, what they're purchasing. And, you know, for maybe an e-commerce company, how much someone's purchasing. Do they purchase because of an email? All types of different information, and that's just one aspect of it. But then we're also using Salesforce to track leads. Mm-hmm. And then Drift for customer support. And we've also used Zendesk in the past. These are all different types of tools that are storing information that is very relevant to a company. And if you go back to kind of what I had mentioned that RJ Metrics does in the, you know, the big data, the analytics piece of the world, it is crucial for businesses to be successful, for them to be able to kind of take all of that different information and make better business decisions on that. So for example, if I use Rent the Runway, am I likely to use, you know, a competitor of that? Am I likely to use something else? They want to analyze that data. They want to know how frequently I'm doing things, if I'm purchasing. They want to look at this behavior. And so that's when a platform like RJ Metrics or maybe Looker wants to come in and analyze that data so that a business can make decisions based on that. The thing that makes that complicated is that all of that data lives in different places. Mm-hmm. So you want to put it all together because you want to analyze everything. You want to know that what my demographic is, what I'm doing, where I'm purchasing. You want to look at all of this information, but it's located in 20 different platforms. So when a tool like that wants to come in and then pull all that data in and analyze it, it's extremely difficult to do that. And we struggled a lot on the RJ side. That was probably one of the things that did sometimes keep us from winning business, was because we couldn't build out the integrations and the connections to do that. And that, you know, we'd be getting all of their data, but then the Salesforce integration wouldn't be working, or then the Google Analytics or the Facebook ads information integration wasn't working. And so in an ideal scenario, you'd have all of your data in one place. Because if all of your data is in one place, something like RJ Metrics or like Looker can just plop right on top of that. They're not connecting to 20 different locations to try to figure out where all this data is. They're connecting to one place where all of this data has been replicated, which makes it a much more seamless transaction. So that's actually why Looker, who ironically enough was formerly a competitor of RJ Metrics, is actually now a partner of Stitch. Does that all make sense?
It does. And so I was thinking about the name Stitch, and that actually makes a lot more sense to me now at a much deeper sort of understanding level that it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is my sort of trying to summarize what you said, which was a wonderful example, is really putting it into context. But I guess based on what you just said, I would say that you stitch the data together so that clients can make better business decisions.
That's exactly what we were looking for.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah, and I could definitely relate to that. Even as a very, very small business, I have data coming in from lots of different places, including some of the places that you talked about. If it lives in different places, then how do I bring it all together? If one platform knows one thing, but another platform knows something else. So that's awesome. Thank you for that explanation.
I think you might have just explained it a little bit better for a 10-year-old, but...
Well, I have a 7-year-old, which is actually what made me think about how to frame that question. But I'm not sure that he would understand. I get your initial sort of, I'm not sure if a 7-year-old could ever, or even a 10-year-old could ever understand. But he gets the internet. Stuff lives on the internet, and it's messy, so we got to put it together.
I'm constantly impressed by how much children know about technology. I think my nieces and my nephews know more about my phone and what they're doing with it than I do. In fact, my 8-year-old niece asked me, she was like, "Are you on Snapchat, Aunt Sam?" And I know what Snapchat is. I'm just not. And the look of distaste that I got for not being on Snapchat, mind you, I'm wondering how at 8 she knows what Snapchat is. And yeah. I'm on the phone at 8. But
oh, man. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Do you lead teams of geeks through long-term, complex projects? If so, check out my free tech leadership webinar, where I share the 5-step game plan my clients used to command 200K plus salaries while upping their free time by 20%. Learn strategies for becoming a leadership master and evoking the best performance from every team member, leaving you gushing with pride. To reserve your spot, go to genbunk.com/webinar. That's genbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. All right. Okay. So let's go back on track to what we were talking about before regarding the acquisition, also talking about the downsizing and how that was a tricky decision and a hard time. And so it seems to me, based on the way that you've been talking about it, and also given that at this point you're a team of the whole team is 27, that you've played a pretty pivotal and central role in terms of making these kinds of decisions. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. Like, right now, what's it like to be, are you the only HR person there now? Or is there other HR kind of support, or people manager kind of support?
Yeah, no, there has only been one person that's handled all of this since I joined, and that one person's me. So I have and continue to be the sole point person for all things people related.
Yeah. So what's that like?
challenging. Uh-huh. You have to be very good at kind of just jumping around. And I call it like organizational chaos. And I think like the perfect example right now is this week. So this week, I need to make some hires. So I have an interview going on. I have interviews going on. I have people in our pipeline that I have to manage. I actually have two offers extended, so I have to manage those offers and make sure that I'm seeing that through fruition. At the same time, open enrollment is coming up. So I've got 27 people asking me what's happening to our health insurance. Are the rates changing? Is our insurance changing? And so I'm getting lots of pings about that. It's also quarterly review time. We just put together a performance management process, you know, just an update from what we were doing previously to make it a little bit more cohesive now that we're a small organization. And I had implemented a new tool to do that. So I'm the main stakeholder in that and making sure that all of these conversations are happening and making sure that everyone is getting the feedback they need to be successful here. And then also at the same time, I'm working to help plan two events for later this year. So it's one of these things where you're just constantly jumping around and juggling. And some days it's hard. Some days you feel like you're only giving 80% to something. I had to learn that some days giving 80% to everything is better than giving 100% to two things and dropping the ball on others. Mm-hmm. That was a hard thing for me to learn, but it's also fun and it's really rewarding and it's enjoyable because I get to touch all of these things. I also get to influence them greatly as well, which is something that I appreciate.
Yeah, that's great. There's so much to potentially talk about here, but what I'd like to talk about, and I'm hearing more chatter about this lately, just both in my circles and on the internet, let's just say in general, and that's the issue of salary transparency. I saw in your Biz Philly article that you said you tackle compensation during the initial 15-minute call with all job candidates. So I'd like to hear a little bit about that. First, for example, how do people generally respond when you talk about numbers, when you talk about compensation, particularly so early in the process, which is earlier than other companies might do it? And how do you get people to basically buckle down and talk about numbers?
Yeah, so this is actually something I love talking about because I think people like you, like I could already kind of tell just from the way that you had phrased it, that you probably think that most people might be uncomfortable about talking about salary first.
Yep.
And honestly, it's pretty much the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. People are actually really happy to get that conversation out of the way. And so let me take a step back and kind of just talk about my people process. And, you know, from a high, high level, I operate and I make sure that we are operating in a way where we are always putting our people first. And so that is number one to me. So for the people that are team members here at Stitch, you know, every business decision that we make that impacts our people, that's the first thing I'm thinking of is this business decision that we are making aligned with the culture that we wanted to create, and et cetera, et cetera. But on the flip side, you know, I think a lot of businesses potentially do that part well, or at least good enough, but most people don't translate that to their hiring process, which is something that I've always found to be so interesting. You know, you can have this company that's winning all of these best places to work awards, but like it takes 9 weeks to go through your interview process. Everyone has been in that time where you've applied to a job, talked to someone, and never heard from that person again. Everyone has fallen into that black hole trap. It's the absolute worst. At people's core, all they want to know is what's going on. They want transparency. And so my reason for bringing up the salary transparency piece is how many times, and I don't know if you've personally been in this, but maybe, I'm sure there's no way you haven't had a friend or someone or a colleague get all the way through an interview process, which sometimes can be, you know, up to 10 to 20 hours of your time dedicated to that. To have an offer come to the table that is nowhere aligned with where that person wants or needs to be.
Yep.
You know, people pay their mortgage. People put food on the table for it. They send their children to college based on, you know, this number that a job has allocated to them. It's such an important number. It's possibly one of the most important pieces of this. But people tend to save it to the end. And it's going to be a deal breaker if you're not aligning. If your budget does not align with what they need, you're just wasting everyone's time. You're wasting your team's time because the last thing you want to do is dangle a carrot and then find out you can't afford someone. And on the other scenario, you're going to really offend someone that has put so much effort into their process because they're going to walk away feeling like they're undervalued.
Yep.
So ago, I started tackling it first. And the way that I explain it to candidates is I say, listen, I want to be respectful of your time and I want to be respectful of my team's time. We're a startup. That means my budgets are pretty concrete. I will talk to you transparently all along the way and let you know kind of where we're at and numbers wise. But if I'm not where you need to be or vice versa, I don't want you to get to the end of the process and be frustrated by that. So be helpful for me to let me know a ballpark of where you are looking to be in your next role, so that I can make sure that that kind of fits into our umbrella. Now, the thing that I always point out there is I'm not asking how much someone is making, which is a question right now that is being scrutinized in the public, and I think that it should be because I think that it plays a lot into the gender gap in regard to with women, what women make or what minorities make in regard to, a man. So if I ask what they want to make, what are you looking to be? So it's a high level question. I'm not asking for any specifics. 9 out of 10 times I get an answer immediately, and at least 7 out of 10 times that follows with this is so refreshing. I'm so glad that we can just talk about this now. Yep. And I don't dig into it. We don't dig into the absolute minor details unless we have to, right? If someone's looking for 120 and I might only have 115, I'm going to say, this is where I think I'm at. I don't know that it makes sense for us to stop having conversation because for the right person, we might be able to make something work. And there's a lot of other intangibles and a lot of other benefits we haven't talked about. But if that number doesn't happen, there's no scenario where you want, you would be able to accept this offer, then we might want to part ways. So it's just being very direct and being very transparent. And what I have found is that people truthfully really appreciate that. And I have had people walk away from my process. I've had people that I've had to say, I don't think it makes sense for us to continue this conversation based on where our budget is.
Yeah.
But you have someone that knows that I'm an advocate for them. So then they go out to the community and say, hey, this company is doing things differently. They're doing things right. And they actually care about this. They care about my time. You might want to look into this.
Yeah.
And that's a fact. I have seen that.
So I'm curious, when you ask, and I love the way you phrase the question, in terms of, we're just talking about ballparks here, does it fit under the umbrella? Where do you want to be? When you ask that question, where do you want to be, do people typically respond with a range or a broad range, or do people have specific numbers in mind?
I would say it's not a broad range. It can be a range. It's pretty rare that someone's I'd want someone between somewhere between 100 and 150.
Yeah.
But it's common for someone to say, this is, and a lot of times people will actually offer up where they're at, which is not my intention. They might say, I'm currently at 110. So for me, it would not make sense for me to make a move under 115. So
yep.
That doesn't, and that's the other thing. That's the next part of this is if you're going to do this, you have to DTRT. Again, that's our thing here. Do the right thing. That person's worth 120. I'm not lowballing them because they have given me 115 as being their bottom. We pay people market here. So that's something that kind of also ties into this is if you're going to ask a question that caught with great responsibility comes or something.
Great power. Oh, I think that's a Spider-Man thing. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. And I kind of think of that, I let these people know, I have I obviously have the power to sit here and negotiate your salary and work with you. I want them to feel confident and know that I'm going to work in your best interest. It's obviously in my best interest to make sure that we are, aligning with our budgets because that's my job. But it's also my job to make sure that the people that are here are happy, they feel valued, and that we're paying them fairly. And I make sure that I'm communicating all of that.
That's great. And that's awesome. And I applaud you and I applaud your company for doing this, for starting this idea of DTRT and this idea of cultural alignment and the idea of transparency and truthfulness from the get-go, because it matters. It makes a difference that even if somebody says a range and you have to come back to them and say, yeah, you know what, it's not going to work out, that's so much better than bringing them through the entire process. And yes, I have had people close to me actually who have gone through that process, that terrible process of getting to almost to the very end, and then it's okay, we got to talk about salary, and it's like, what? It's not even in the range of what I was thinking. Why couldn't you talk about it in the beginning? So I think that's awesome. I think it's awesome. So I have kind of this may be getting too much into the details for some people, but it's something that came to mind. My very first job, I mean, this was right out of college. They gave me the salary number, and I got so excited about it. I mean, you know, this was like way more than I had ever made in my life. And because it was right out of college, right? Because all I had done before that was, you know, like part-time jobs and stuff like that. So I was super excited about it. And so I accepted it, and I said, yeah, sure, yeah, this is great. And it was a great job. And then they was like I don't remember if it was the HR person or something. They called me back later, and they said, oh, we kind of, I don't remember exactly how he worded it. It was like, we kind of made a little bit of a mistake. The number we gave you was, how did he phrase it? Like total compensation that included all of the benefits and everything too. That's not actually your salary. The salary, what you would get as a paycheck, is less than that. And I was like, oh man, you know, I still ended up taking the job because it was still a very reasonable salary. But I'm wondering if you get into that early, like, do you talk about total compensation, including the benefits and everything, versus what your paychecks would be?
I talk about everything, and oh, shame on them. That makes me so angry to hear that. There is nothing that makes me angrier than when I hear, and it could be compensation or it could be anything, when something is misrepresented in the interview process. I mean, listen, no one's perfect. We're a startup. The job that I was hired for 2 years ago is about a tenth of the job that I'm doing today. So your job's going to change, and there's like the ability to expect that. But like, if they hired me as a recruiter and then said, hey, just kidding, you're going to be an account manager, that's not really cool. And who are that? And I'm willing to get into the granular details of everything, because why not? Like, what is the downside? Like, what is the downside of someone coming into our interview process being totally educated on what a total compensation package looks like? And depending on the person, like, I have had people say, like, on call number one, and you know, ask me all those types of things, because they're trying to weigh that. And I'm very happy to go through all of that. I'll tell them what our benefits look like. I'm super proud of our benefits. We cover 100% for team members and individually, and we also contribute a lot to employee plus children and family plans. I'll talk to them that we want. I tell them about our stock. I tell them about all the perks and the benefits they'll have. I mean, yeah, I'm rambling here, but reason why I wouldn't tell them everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a poker game, right? You know, show all your cards and everybody wins.
I love that. It's not a poker game. And I think it would be a lot better if people realized that, because I think, and maybe it's not realizing it, but I think it's kind of a shift that has to take place, right? Like, people have to realize that this is more of a, it should be more of a conversation, and it should be more of an interview on both sides. But I think it's just, you're right, just ultimately becomes a poker game where no one's showing their true face. And in the end, sometimes people don't win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. I've had lots of fun talking about salary transparency, but I am going to shift because there is one other thing I want to talk about. A couple of things. I think we have time for it. The first is, one of the things that I do right now and that I focus on is helping engineering managers to become better leaders and to build awesome teams. So essentially the managers of the software engineers. And so I've been learning more about that world. And so I'm wondering, given your focus on people, and also I'm assuming there are some software engineers who work at Stitch.
Yes, that would be about half of our organization.
Yeah, yeah. So software engineers have been called chaotic, beautiful snowflakes. The first time that I heard it was Michael Lopp uses it in his book, Managing Humans. So Michael Lopp is Rands in Repose. He, also known as Rands in Repose, he has a blog, he's written a couple of books. And I loved that phrase of thinking about software engineers as chaotic, beautiful snowflakes. The idea that they're chaotic, like most people, right? Being human, we're not machines, we're not robots, right? And then the beautiful piece of it, and you can kind of interpret that as you want, but just like all humans, right? They software engineers, want to be treated and want to live beautiful lives. And then, of course, the snowflakes piece of it, that they're all different. You know, don't expect them to run like a program. And so I think that that's a particularly relevant and useful phrase to use with for engineering managers, because engineering managers often get into this engineering mindset of like, oh, I'm going to manage my humans the same way that I manage, you know, code, which is absolutely the wrong way to think about it. So I love this thinking of software engineers as chaotic, beautiful snowflakes. So I'm wondering how you, as someone who's at the center of the people management at Stitch, how you embrace that chaos and what specific strategies you've used to help make all of your employees, including the software engineers, feel more quote unquote beautiful.
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to my mind is I think every person that we have here is a chaotic, beautiful snowflake. Yeah. So I think everyone operates in a slightly different way and needs certain things to be successful. And I think that going to your point about software engineers, I think because we've built a culture accepting that everyone is different, it's helped us create a culture that is inclusive to that work for everyone. So, you know, generally speaking, you know, we are constantly, you know, giving feedback and having conversations here, and we're very open-minded about things. And, you know, the way that we're looking at it from like an engineering standpoint, and I'll kind of spin off into one area, is, you know, some of our engineers want managerial and leadership career paths. A lot of them don't. Some of them like meetings, others don't. So we try to be flexible about the way that we're doing things. And when I look at our engineering leadership and, you know, how he and I work in conjunction with making sure that, you know, our team members are getting what they need to be successful here, we kind of customize that a little bit based upon the individual. But at the same time, I also think that we put things in place that tend to be generally well received by everyone. So first and foremost, we are not a super meeting-centric organization. If you can save someone's time in a meeting, that's something that we're looking to do. So any efficiencies that you can create around that, we're always looking to. And I think just by nature, a lot of times engineers don't love being in meetings. That's actually one of the things that I hear so frequently in my recruitment calls is, how many meetings are you going to make me sit through a day?
Yep.
We recognize that, and so we've built a culture around making sure that we do not do that. That said, we do, we do operate in agile methodology, right? So we have project teams, people rotate accordingly and they get to touch different things. There are stand-ups and weekly sprints to go through all of that. But again, we do everything efficiently. So being efficient and being respectful of people's time is a huge core component of, you know, the culture that we've built here, which I think helps as well. And again, at the same time, I know that we're focusing on the software engineers, but I have to keep kind of coming back from like a larger organizational standpoint. I think that we just have a culture that we have created here that no one is trying to put people and manage people like they're all the same or like a machine. I know at the end of the day, we are an organization that truly puts our people first, and putting our people first means doing and giving them everything that they need to be successful. So I have a team of leaders here who recognize that as one of our core values, and because of that are very dedicated to making sure that each individual is getting the things that they need to be successful here.
Yeah, and I think that this is a wonderful example of how values guide behaviors and the day-to-day, that a core value is at Stitch is putting people first. And so this was decided and you embrace that and everybody embraces that. And so it makes it easier to say, okay, this is how we're going to, like when you get down into the weeds, like, okay, meetings, right? Okay, if people matter and people don't want to waste their time in boring, useless meetings, then let's figure out a way to not do that, right? And that all comes from the people first strategy. So I talk about, or the people first value system. I talk about cultural alignment a lot with clients and in the trainings that I do. And sometimes I wonder if people actually get it. What does it mean to make decisions that are aligned with your culture? I think that at Stitch, it's a beautiful example of how that actually works and how it translates to the day-to-day.
Yeah, it has to be from the top down, right? Like you have to come up with these values and you have to make a commitment to them. Otherwise, they're just words on paper.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about meetings a little bit, because this is a pain point that I encounter quite a bit as well with the folks I talk with and with my clients. So what do you do instead of meetings? So you said you're not a meeting-centric culture, which I think, you know, is awesome. You're figuring out ways other than meetings to share information and to make decisions like that. So what kind of strategies, what kinds of tactics, you know, kind of even to get down to that level, happen to replace meetings?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first, I do want to say that we do have meetings, mm-hmm. but I think we make efficient use of the time in meetings. Like we, so again, coming back to like the respect piece and being respectful of one another's time, we actually have like a policy here, which is one that I've never heard of before. And I have seen people use it, but if you're ever in a meeting and you don't feel like you're adding value or getting anything out of it, leave.
Yep.
And we encourage that. And so I think that that helps put, it applies a little bit of pressure for all of us to make sure that, like, if you're putting a meeting on someone's calendar and you're taking 30 minutes away from them doing the thing that they have to do every single day, you need to make sure that you're being respectful of their time. So that's first and foremost. What I think, you know, that we're doing is we're making sure that we are being efficient in those meetings, because it's impossible to be successful without sometimes getting together. I mean, the next thing I'll tell you regarding why we are so successful here is because of our collaboration, and collaboration happens in meetings. But outside of that, I also think we just use a lot of tools. Slack is super helpful. I mean, sometimes it's easier just to shoot people notes and send over information. We're also huge on doc sharing. Google Drive changed the world. I mean, they really did. And I think of times where, like, for like a brainstorming session in a previous life where it would have been four of us sitting, actually, perfect example. So something that I do here every time that we have a new position that we're kicking off, and generally speaking, it's like a relatively new one. I don't know that I would do this for like the same old positions, but like if it's a position we've never hired for, or if the role's changed, what I would have done in a previous organization is pull everything together. Let's brainstorm. Let's talk. I'll take notes. And it becomes this drawn out thing. And then we circle back two or three times. Because I was a meeting happy organization, the way that I like to call it. Mm-hmm. Rather, in this scenario now, we encourage people, and I do this very frequently, is I'll set up a Google Doc. I'm in there and I start typing things up. And if I want other people's feedback, I'll put their names in this doc. I did share that doc with them. And I say, hey, I would love your thoughts on this. Then when that person has time and it's the time, like the best time in their day, they're able to jump in, and we're able to do this sort of collaboration, but without, like, it's like respectful collaboration almost. We do a ton of that here. I cannot say how frequently we are collaborating via docs and everything. And sometimes it can get a little weird because, like, you're sitting directly across from someone who's in the same doc as you, and instead of talking to them, you're doing this. But I have to say that I'm blown away with the efficiency of it too, because I think we just get things done so much quicker with that. And we're able to then maybe, instead of having that brainstorming session that would have been across two-hour meetings, instead, we get together for 15 minutes to talk about all the things that we've prepared beforehand. So what I do here is I'll start creating that Google Doc. Who's going to ask questions? I put that down. Everybody starts adding their questions in. They'll see that somebody else took that question, so the next person changes that. And it just becomes this collaborative doc, and then we get together and just kind of confirm those details. That meeting is then 15 minutes instead of an hour, and like, or 2 minutes, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. And I think with things like Slack and things like Google Drive, they're asynchronous. So people can, you have the flexibility to decide when you want to do it, right? So if it's right now and you happen to be logged in at the same time, sure, you can have a synchronous chat on Slack or on Google Drive. You could do synchronous sort of, hey, here's my comment. Hey, here's my comment. But you don't have to do that, right? That it gives you that flexibility to sort of say, no, you know what? I'm in the zone right now. I'm not going to deal with this. But then after I get out of the zone, I'll go and take a look at what she sent me.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I learned, that I've learned in my career, and it was a big thing for me to learn, is people operate differently. I am someone who gets interrupted literally every 15 minutes, for something. And I'm okay with that. And I can bounce back into what I was doing. It doesn't distract me. But yep. What I've learned, there are people that cannot operate in that environment, that cannot operate with noise. And we have those people here. So, you know, you have to build a culture on making sure that someone like me is comfortable, but then someone like someone else who you know, would completely falter with a disruption, is that their time is protected as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we have a few more minutes, so I'm going to ask the last question, which I ask everyone who is on my podcast, which is, what's the biggest people-related challenge in your job? And you can interpret that however you wish.
The people-related challenge in my job. That is such a great question. I wish I would have listened to your other podcasts so I could have heard the other answers first. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that. I think that when I think the thing that is the most difficult thing for me personally is I care a lot about the people that we have here. And sometimes I think that's the difficult part about being in like a people operations or a director role is sometimes you have to make decisions that are the best things for the business that ultimately might not be the best things for the people. And I think that those decisions that I've had to be a part of in my career are some of the hardest ones that I have to make. And, you know, we talked about the downsizing this year and like the repercussions of that. That was really difficult. And I was a key part in orchestrating and handling all of that, but it paints me in a different light to people. And so I have to be the person that everyone's comfortable and comfortable talking to here internally, because I'm the point person for everything. And, you know, to be frank, after that, after the downsizing, as well as I think we did it, I found out that people had like anxiety about being in a room with me, because just by nature, there is like a little bit of like the dark side of the bad side of HR is, well, is Sam coming to talk to me because Sam just wants to ask me a question, or is there something bigger going on? So I think that sometimes that's hard for me because I forget that. Like, I forget about that part, right? Where like on a normal day-to-day basis, I'm here, we're all happy, we're great. But then like I put time on someone's meeting or calendar and I forget to Slack them and tell them why. And that is the thing I do. I do not put a single meeting on anyone in this organization's calendar without telling them why I'm doing it, because I've learned that it causes them so much anxiety. So for me, it's like such a challenge because I like to think of myself as this like big, friendly, loving person. But because of what I do by nature, people are kind of a little scared of me. So yeah. That's a winded answer, but it definitely can be, I think, a challenge to have to overcome that because, you know, I have to not be hurt. My feelings have to not be hurt by that. But by nature, they sometimes kind of are.
Right. And I could see how the transparency and the truthfulness can help there as well. Like you just gave a perfect example of that this is why we're meeting, right? You know, I'm putting this on your calendar and maybe it's today or tomorrow or whatever, and that this is it. Right. And so that if it's just something very minor, it's like, oh, okay, cool. And if it's not, it's like, okay, they can prepare for it a little bit. So I hope that those tactics are helping in terms of smoothing over whatever rough edges might happen when, Sam has to talk with me, or like when someone comes into your office, right? Because you never know what that's going to be, right? You know, is it just going to be kind of a minor thing? Like, yeah, I need to update my address for insurance purposes or whatever. Or is it something bigger that's bubbling underneath the surface?
Yeah, see, you know what? I've never actually put that out there, but I'd like to do that because I have a slight heart attack every single time someone's like, Sam, I need to talk to you about something. And I'm like, oh no, what's going on? And then they're like, how do I update my address in Bamboo? I just can't seem to remember that.
Right. You know, sometimes it's really minor stuff, and that's part of wearing multiple hats, right? That you wear so many hats that sometimes it's the minor stuff, but you deal with the major stuff as well. And it sounds like from what you said, you've been doing it, you've been doing a wonderful job with it. So on behalf of all other folks involved in HR and all other folks involved in tech, thank you for that. Thank you for being so passionate, and thank you for being so committed to me putting people first.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I hope that I can inspire one other person to, you know, put people first in their processes and to realize that like the old ways of doing things are not always necessary. That makes my day.
Awesome. Well, it was great talking with you, Sam.
Oh, it was great talking with you too, Jen.
Okay, take care.
All right, bye-bye.